I'm Evan Applegate. I'm a cartographer, and on Very Expensive Maps, I talk to better cartographers. This week, you'll hear from David Colbeth, the founder of Columbus Cartography. David designs copperplate etched maps and prints them on custom-made paper, combining modern geography with an antique style.
I'm David Colbeth. I'm from Stafford, Virginia, and I'm a cartographer, a business owner, and I guess entrepreneur. I think it was in college. I was in geology. I took a GIS course, and you know, that's where I made my first maps. You know, basic, simple. When I went for my master's, that was a little more involved. And that's where I learned, I don't know, I would usually call that one my first map, I guess.
Were you educated as a geologist?
Yeah, undergrad was in geology, and then a master's in geographic and cartographic sciences.
So when did you pick up this old-style cartography?
I started selling maps in March of this year, 2023, and then I started building the business and doing the designing of the first map a year before that. I definitely wanted to do copperplate.
Could you give me an overview of what exactly is involved in the copperplate engraving and printing process?
Sure. So there's a bit of a difference between engraving and etching. Engraving, I think, takes a little more skill. It's more of a push engraving, and you're incising the plate with the tools. And so you're creating a well for that ink to reside. And then the etching is, you're kind of more scratching the surface. And so there's an acid bath that you put the copper plate in, and it eats away at whatever is scratched. I'll take you from the start to finish of the copper plate etching technique. We start with the design of the geography of the map digitally. And that's the only thing that's done digitally. Everything else is done manually by hand. You know, we get our sources of the geography from different places, use different reference material, and then we compile the map on the computer. And then I have another etching artist who will print off the map and transfer all that information to the copper plate. And he actually goes over it twice. So all the detail, it's not only gone over twice, but it's done in reverse. So he traces the map data over the copper plate onto a layer, a kind of a resistant waxy layer. And then he'll take off the paper, then scratch the surface again. Then once that's complete, he'll take the plate and dip it in, like I said, the acid bath for a few minutes to eat away at the scratching.
How does the printing work?
Yeah, so the printing is done just right there after the copper plate's been etched. We have our ink. We tested out a few different combinations because I didn't want a straight black ink, right? So we added a couple other tones to it, colors to it, or ink to it, to get the right color. So we just rub the ink all over the plate, kind of wipe it off, and then we put it onto our paper and then put the copper plate on top of that and send it through an etching press. It's a rolling press. So you have all the pressure going through. It's really just the paper is really capturing that ink from those ink wells, the etching ink wells in the copper plate. Once it rolls through the press, you're left with the ink on the paper, and you can see that the plate mark is there. It's visible. Depending on the thickness of the paper, you'll have a pretty defined plate mark.
As in the rectangular border for the whole plate.
Yeah, exactly.
How did you meet the artist?
I hired online. First, I was looking for a straight engraving artist, but I realized, okay, the engraving, it's a little more complicated. Not everyone does engraving. In fact, not many people at all. So I realized, okay, we'll just go with etching. And etching can produce a similar result. So anyway, I hired him online, and then, you know, we just went over our designs and started creating the maps.
I noticed there's color on some editions. Is that watercolor?
It is watercolor, yeah. A lot of times, the maps of, you know, 1600s and 1700s, they were not watercolored. Most of them were left blank. And a lot of times, these maps are only colored because someone wants them colored. You know, someone purchases an antique map, and there's no watercolor on them, so they hire someone to do that. So we did try to match the style and the type of color tones from 1600s, 1700s, 1800s, because not all watercolors are made the same. You have to get certain brands and make the right color combinations sometimes. Of course, it's best if it's just the straight color, but for some of these, we found that it's better if you mix a couple to get it just right.
Was there a long prototype process before you started selling these, getting the right ink for the prints down and the right color combinations for the watercolors?
Yeah, it's taken so long to get everything just right because there's no guidebook to this, you know? No one's been making 18th century maps recently, right? Through copper plate etching. No one does that. So we've just kind of had to research it out ourselves. And, you know, look at the examples that we have printed in books or in-person maps, you know, at galleries or government institutions. So we just, it has taken a lot of trial and error in every step of the process.
That sounds very cartographic. There's no living masters of this stuff to learn from. You got to test it until it looks kind of right. The nice part about that is no one can wag their finger at you and tell you you're doing it wrong because it's just you doing it.
That's true. Well, I don't know. Maybe you know, the map historian at the Library of Congress or National Archives or wherever they are, they might, I don't know, maybe they'll see the maps and say, oh, you did this wrong. But is it really wrong? You know, I've looked at hundreds of maps and I see variations all the time. You know, some do line work. Coastal line work one way, some do it another way. It changed from one century to the next. You know, there's different borders, there's different designs, and there is no 100% standard necessarily that's out there. So I feel fine, you know, doing things a little differently, kind of making up my own rules, but I still try to keep it, you know, as historically accurate as possible. Another thing I'll mention in the process is getting the right paper. So that was one of the first things that I probably set out to do, is to find the right kind of paper. You have watercolor paper, you have etching paper, and then you have, you know, a whole range of papers in between. A lot of the etching paper, it comes from, you know, one or two different companies, and it all has the same color and look to it. But it's not an antique look, and it's not an antique looking color necessarily. It's either white or like an off-white or something. Well, I didn't want that. I didn't want any, you know, modern day made, factory made paper. I wanted it hand done. So finding a paper maker who would make it to my specifications, making it watercolor, you know, making the paper useful for watercolor and for printing, you know, that's a challenge. And we've had challenges. We can see the challenge in working with the watercolor. It's hard. It's not easy. It's not like your easy watercolor paper that, you know, you can buy at the art supply store. It's very different. So anyway, finding a paper maker to not only make it right using the fibers that are needed for it, the right coloring, but even the right size. There's a lot of paper makers out there. There's not that many, but there's a fair few. Most of them, you know, when I asked them, hey, can you do this? They said, no, definitely not that big, not for that quantity. And we can't include a watermark in there. That's just too much to handle. So it took me months to find the paper maker, but I did. And they did everything that I wanted them to do. We have watermark in our big sheets of paper, so the 18 by 24. It's a custom watermark made for that, you know, just the right color. And it's great. It's fantastic.
Unique paper, unique design, unique printing, unique color.
Yeah.
I see you sell different sizes, and artist engraves a new plate for each size, right?
Yeah. So we have kind of two different sizes right now. The larger size, 18 by 24 inches, we haven't printed a map yet. So it's in the works. We're in production stages right now. So we should have one printed by the end of the month. while we were waiting for that, we decided to go with smaller versions. So it's a 5x7 copper plate on a 8x10 size sheet of paper. You know, it's kind of a, the copper sheets, they come in certain sizes. You can't just buy, you know, any size copper sheet that you want. If you do want a copper sheet, you know, you have to cut it down to the size, and finding the right equipment to do that's a bit of a hassle too. And to keep it, you know, smooth is another thing. So anyway, we buy the copper sheets. We've started to realize that we can't cut the copper down, so we'll have more size sheets available. But yeah, so we just have the 5x7, and then I'll digitally enlarge it for the 16x20 fine art print size.
Right now, they're all designed for 5x7-inch plates.
Yeah, the ones that we have on our website right now, yes.
Are there any plans to draw at larger scale and print at larger scale through the press?
Yeah, like I said, we have the 18x24-inch copper plate. It's pretty big. You know, that probably was the maximum size copper plate printing that they did back, you know, 16, 1700s. So we're really pushing the boundaries there because it's just such a large surface area to do such detailed work that you need your lenses to get up close and see what you're doing. So to reach over, you know, to get to all sides of the copper plate is really challenging to do. And plus, you know, most people don't have that size wall space to put it on. And then since the sheets aren't, they're a little bigger than the regular standard framing size, you have to get a custom frame made so that you can see that deckled edge. Of course, if you don't care about the deckled edge, then it doesn't matter. But I don't know. One of the draws of getting an original print, original edition, is to have that deckled edge that you know was made by hand, hand laid. So anyway, yeah, we do have large size copper plates, but I think going forward, we'll probably keep it to a smaller size than the 18x24.
Do you have the 18x24 design blocked out?
Yes, it is of the United States. I've got another one of Virginia. So I'm from Virginia. I love the history here. And that's actually the first map that we designed. So going back to the conversation about finding an engraver, that was probably the first thing that I started investigating when I started this business, was to find an engraver to do the work. Well, you wouldn't believe how hard it is to find someone who does that, especially here in the United States. Most of the engravers, when I talked to them and asked them to do this, they said, oh, there's no way we would do that. No way. Because most of them, they work on like gunsmithing stuff. So they're engraving guns and jewelry and that type of stuff. They don't do copper plate engraving. So it's very rare. American universities, they don't teach that kind of engraving as much. They do etching. They do copper plate etching, but it's hard to find in the United States. And then on top of that, finding someone to do it for a reasonable price, it just wasn't happening. Anyway, I found an engraver in London who agreed to do it. And, you know, we talked about the requirements. I said, it's a large plate, 18x24 inches. He said, oh, yeah, I can do it. I can do it. Anyway, I went over there, delivered the copper plate, and he's had it for 8 months now. And I don't know what's going on, but it's taken quite a bit of time to do. So the part of the engraving that he was doing was just the lettering, right? Not the illustrative stuff, not the geography map stuff. It was just the letters. Now, granted, we had, you know, hundreds of words on there. I think somewhere like 2,800 letters. So, you know, when you're paying per letter, that adds up. It adds up to a lot. So, the fact that I wanted to have an engraved map done is just become not doable, right? Regionally priced, it's just not possible. You know, it is historically accurate and correct, though, that a lot of the maps were a mixed combination of both etching and engraving. A lot of the illustrations were done by etching to get those fine lines there. And then most of the engraving was the lettering. So we were trying to be historically accurate there, but cost-wise, we just can't do engraved letters.
So those 2,800 letters are going to be etched, not engraved?
for that Virginia map, that historical Virginia map that I have, depending on if it actually gets done or not by the engraver, that should be the only plate that will be hand engraved. The others are going to be hand etched. It's just, it's a different style of font.
Hand etched text. I talked to Jake Coolidge, Park Service cartographer, who did the same wax covered copper plate plus metal scribe etching. And the lettering, he said, was just terrible to do because you have to do it backwards. But luckily, he had experience with this in his printmaking program in college. He was arts educated. That was something they did as an undergrad, was copper plate etching. And so once he became a map maker, he just went back to it and found the one studio in Seattle that still had people experienced with the correct acid ratio. But he really picked cartography hard mode for this one.
Yeah, it was a challenge from the get-go, and it still is, but finding the right people to do everything was the hardest part. But you're right, I remember him, I think he presented at the North America Cartographic Society about his copper plate etching, and I thought, oh yeah, I know all about that. I know all about how challenging it is.
And how has their response been when you show these to people?
Oh, they love it. And that's the thing, like people have to see it in person usually to really appreciate it. You know, I have a website, you can see the pictures, you know, maybe I need to get better pictures, but it's really hard to understand it. It's when people come to the booth, you know, at the fairs and the shows, and I am able to tell them, hey, this is the story of how it's made. I show them a copper plate. I show them the custom paper. They can look, they can feel the plate mark. And they're intrigued, you know, that's what they love. They love the handmade aspect of this. You know, I think people appreciate that. They appreciate the time that it takes, the artistry involved in it. And, you know, they want their own map made.
Oh, you take any custom clients?
So I just posted a custom map request form on my website. I've gotten a few responses, few requests. And I've provided an estimate, but as many of these cartographers on your podcast have said, it takes a lot of effort to make anything custom. And I think people are surprised and a little put off by the price, you know, that I give them. And, you know, I probably would be too. I want to give people a fair price, you know, and the prices that I have on the website are pretty much rock bottom for a high quality original print or even a fine art print. They're pretty low prices compared to what other artists, you know, in the market sell for. So we can do custom orders, but just know it'll be a little on the expensive side.
I'll be the first to tell you, double your prices. That's the best part about selling this stuff because, well, where else are you going to get it? Go find someone else making handmade copper plate engraved maps on custom made paper.
Yeah. Well, you know, and the only reason I can sell them at a very reasonable price right now is because I can semi-mass produce them. I am limited, however, in the number of prints that I get per copper plate. And we haven't quite tested out the maximum of that yet, but it's somewhere on the range of, you know, 100 or so, give or take, hopefully more. So you can only get so many before the plate wears out. And once the plate wears out, I'm not going to go back in and fix it. So those are, you know, one-of-a-kind additions.
The plate wears out and won't hold ink anymore. It'll get smeary.
Right. It won't be as crisp.
Would you take the old plate and refresh it? Or do you have to start totally fresh on a new plate?
You could refresh it. I don't know if I want to do that yet. To maintain the high quality and high standard, I think I want to limit it to what's done. And I'm never going to sell the copper plates, at least not the ones that I do in reverse. A couple people have asked about that. Do you sell the copper plate? I said, no, I'm not selling them. I might sell them if it's a front-facing etching of a map. I've considered that. I probably will do that.
Well, right now you are the American monopolist on art directing and producing copper plate etched maps. So if you could be the upstream guy, yeah, I'll sell you a reverse copper plate thing. Give me $10,000.
Well, right. I mean, you could go and hire someone to print off as many copies as you want if it's done in reverse, right? So yeah, I'm not going to do that.
And do you sell mostly retail or do you have a shop that buys your maps and puts them in the window?
I don't yet. when I first started, I met with different historical societies, organizations, and I said, hey, this is the concept. Here's a digital version of the Virginia map. You know, would you be interested in this? Some of them said yes. Some of them said no. One in particular said yes, but, you know, the price point that I was giving them, he said, we have to double that at least to sell in our shop. That's a huge markup. And I don't really like the fact that you're marking up my products that much. You know, I understand, you know, if it's a commercial, you know, business, I understand some sort of markup. But one of the main points of me doing this business was to keep the prices low because antique maps are so expensive right now. Or, you know, they have been and they probably will be. And I didn't want that. I wanted accessible, you know, affordable antique looking maps. So anyway, yes, I did reach out to these places for them to sell, you know, for me to sell to them in bulk. I'm kind of waiting until I have this other historical United States map done to go back to them and say, hey, this is what I have. Because the one I'm working on, it's the theme is the founding of the United States. So I have in the cartouche illustration area, I have the signing of the Declaration scene. I have a Revolutionary War soldier carrying the Betsy Ross Revolutionary style flag. And then I have a scene of the Pilgrims and the American Indians, you know, to show kind of these are the founding events and people of the United States, just to give it a little historical context.
Since these are in a specific historical style, do you have a prototypical map in mind when you're making these or art directing these? Like something in front of you that you looked at and thought, oh, that's, I'm going for this kind of map.
There's usually a style that I'm going for that I've seen somewhere in my map book collection, you know, the certain projection, map projection that I want to use. For instance, this U.S. founding colonial themed one, it's not the Mercator projection. I don't like the look of the Mercator map of the United States, so I chose something else. But I saw an example of that in another map, so I said, hey, let's do that.
So you found the style you're going for in a book.
Yeah, so a few months ago, I was part of an online map Facebook group, and someone posted there. They said, hey, I have hundreds of books that I'm giving away. I'm trying to clear out my house. Would anyone be interested? And he used to do cartography. And I immediately said, yes, I am interested. So I have 12 moving boxes full of our map books, and it covers everything that you could possibly think of for maps. And so having those examples in front of me to reference, to use and to read through has been amazing.
One obsessive's collection that he decided to get rid of?
Yeah, it covers everything. It has atlases, it has the historical books, it has books, you know, specific time periods, regions of the world. And, you know, as I'm reading through these, there are some differences, but a lot of these books, they just kind of re-say the same things, and they're kind of re-showing the same kinds of maps. So it takes a little bit of effort to sift through them and actually find, you know, a wider variety of examples.
And the ones that you're drawn to, are they depicting the landforms, the political boundaries? What's the type?
I guess mostly political boundaries. I'm trying to keep my map simple, you know, for a variety of reasons. Although this Virginia map I'm working on, that it is not simple. It is very detailed. There's so many illustrations on there that it's maybe a bit overwhelming. But it's packed. It's pretty cool, and I think people will be excited once they see it. Actually, I've been showing printed version at my art shows, and they're like, "Oh, I love this. I want this." You know, When you have this, let me know and I'll get it. I'm like, oh, okay. I didn't realize that this style was so, you know, in demand, but we'll see. So yeah, I do try to keep it simple. You know, cost wise, doing all the lettering, if I had all the place names on my map as the maps of old have, there's no way people could afford it. So I can't have thousands of places on the maps. It's just not doable. So I'm sticking with natural features, mountains, rivers, lakes, and then adding some historical illustrations of, you know, influential people, places, events, buildings, something meaningful, you know, of that region or of that time period. You know, it's something more than just a map.
You're also trying to thread a very specific needle of I'm reviving old labor-intensive techniques where every step is expensive, and I don't want it to be too expensive to the end user.
That's true. I think I'm doing it, though. I have a show coming up in DC, and it's a fancier show. I haven't done, it's like an art gallery type one, and I haven't done it before. And they said, oh, I was looking through your website, and I think you definitely need to raise your prices. And I thought, okay, well, I don't really want to do that, you know, because in some places I read, yeah, you shouldn't lower your artwork, right? Because the people who buy it, you know, they would feel bad that you lower the prices. I guess if I'm going to a fancy show, I'll raise my prices temporarily or something.
Like I looked on your site and I was like, did I see that right? $75 for something that every step is manual. Even the paper took an absurdly painstaking process to make it.
I know, right? It's already rock bottom prices. I can't.
You're already at the floor. $300 would be what I would guess. Because if I walked up to that antique map dealer and saw something that looked like that and it was in a nice frame, that would be kind of what I'd expect. People at art fairs sell reproductions of acrylics or photos for $75 and an 8x10. I admire your principles, though. You're like, I'm not going to charge too much for my spectacularly difficult maps.
I'll give you a couple other things why I set out to do the business. One, you look at these antique maps, right? And you see a lot of places on them, but some of them you just don't even recognize. I've seen Virginia maps of places, and I'm like, I don't even know what this is. I've never heard of this place before. You know, it doesn't exist anymore. So I wanted to create maps that have modern geography. And you can see on the website, it's modern places in an antique style. And kind of reviving, you know, that traditional map making process too. And then also these old maps, they're usually pretty small, right? And I wanted to do big maps. I didn't want to have to cut and paste different sheets together. I know that they did that. They cut up the paper as big as plates that they had and then placed it on linen backing, and voila, you have a big map. I just want a big map to start with. But, you know, I've learned that you can only go so big with the copper plates and even the printing press. You just can't go much, much bigger. Anyway, I go to these antique map shops and I'm thinking, I don't want to pay for this. I don't recognize the places. I don't, you know, feel that much of a connection here. So I'm just going to do it myself. So that took me on, you know, a years long journey to figure out how to do it. And now here I am making my own antique looking maps with modern geography.
It looks like the old style maps that I like, but it has the geographies that are familiar.
Yeah.
People would come up to my booth, you know, you do your patter, and I ask, you got any maps hung up in your house? And if they say yes, I always guess, were they made before or after 1980? And the answer is always before. Once the computer came along, nobody wanted to hang computer outputs on their walls, because I think people could detect that in the old style of map making, in this case, copper plate etching, you need an artist's attention over every square inch of it. There's no asking the computer to give you something and then throwing out what you don't need. Start with a blank slate, make your marks, and consider what the marks are.
Yes.
That method kind of evaporated since, as you can tell, no one does that way anymore. And all modern maps are computer outputs where the software has a very big influence on how the actual map looks. And before then, the defaults were not software's ideas, but are the artist's training or the artist's taste. I think really people can detect that lack of effort for, I guess, more modern produced maps. And this is just a long way winded way of saying, then thanks for trying it the hard way.
Yeah, you know, you're absolutely right. There's so many map styles out there these days, but it's so digitized. There's basically four types of maps. There's the hand-drawn slash fantasy, the Lord of the Rings style, usually drawn with pen or like a digital illustration. A lot of people do that. You know, you've had cartographers, you know, speak to you and give presentations on doing that thing. And I think that's most of what the hand-drawn, you know, maps are these days. And then there's the digital and artsy ones. You know, you've got your push pins, your regional topographic maps. Some of them look 3D, yet they're not 3D. And I'm thinking, why would you print a 3D map, 3D looking map, but it's not 3D? Or, you know, you've got the map-like category. So there's limited and basic design of local streets or countries or topography. Or, you know, these are like the printed on the sheet paper or the wood cutouts, right? There's just nothing to it. It's streets. And I don't know. There's not much to that. And then you have the antique map dealers who are just reselling older maps.
Only the antique part can you detect both richness in material, richness in labor and sourcing. I agree with what you said about those old maps that look 3D but aren't, because that's just usually taking an old map and grafting computer-generated 3D relief on it, which is bumper sticker on a Ferrari. Like, you can tell where the effort was made.
Yes. And I read, you know, I followed their post or whatever, and all the comments are saying, well, why aren't they 3D? Are you going to make them 3D? I'm like, yeah, exactly. Exactly. They need to be.
All the deconstructed maps of road networks plus materials, if you're lucky, because a lot of them are just road networks plus paper. At least there's some effort with like road networks plus CNC or 3D printing or laser cut. It's again, it starts and ends as a computer output. That's why my favorite maps are wherever you can not hide the effort that went into them. There's a lady in France, Lenny Schlosser, who makes ceramic maps. A vineyard will commission her to create their whole valley in ceramic that she sculpts, fires, glazes, paints, and you got a 3x2 foot landscape. There's no part of that that's skipped or digitized. Or people who make maps out of embroidery. There's literally no way to speed up going up and down with your hand on a needle. And that's totally embedded in the work. All the maps I make for money are going cute PowerPoints or stuck on a wall. And there's no real craft or time to them. Nobody's ever emailed me and said, like, man, that map you made for our big corporation, I look at it every single day and I cherish it. But things that are actually effortful or handmade, that sticks to people. They can relate to it and it joins the same class as like, oh, my, you know, beloved piece of antique furniture.
Yeah, no, I agree. You know, I've gone to a couple of these shows and, you know, people ask, well, do you have a map of this area? This, one of those last shows I went to, there were 10 people who said, do you have a map of the Chesapeake Bay? And I was in, you know, southeastern Virginia. And I'm like, I don't. This is all I have. I just started selling in March. Like, these take 1 to 2 months to make. Like, I don't have that yet. And they were upset. They're like, you should have known your market if you were coming down here. I'm like, yeah, you're right. Maybe I should. They said, you know, if you have that map, you're going to sell out because people love this area. They love, you know, the beach or whatever it is. So that's one of my top three maps that I'm going to be making in the next couple months.
And that's the secret of selling maps. People care much more that their geography is represented rather than the, I guess, overall quality or finish of the map. You've seen this. You go on Etsy and there's map stores that have 4,000 items. All of them look terrible, but they sell really well because like, oh, well, someone had my town. Thank you. Got it. A perfect gift for my roommate or something like that.
Yep.
There's essentially a very small market for, wow, I love the pure craft of cartography. I don't care what's on the map. I've done the same thing. You show up to a place, you don't have that precise geography, you're going to get told.
Yeah, that's true.
Or the worst, hey, do you have this town? And I'm like, oh, you're 1 inch to the right off the map I have. Just so close.
Yeah, I'm with you there.
Okay, so you got the Virginia and USA maps upcoming.
That is correct, yeah. So the USA, I've got one in the founding of the US kind of themed one. And then I think I'm going to have one of like the Civil War time period. It'll either be that kind of the exploration out west. So, you know, Lewis and Clark and Oregon Trail, that type of stuff.
Thanks so much for agreeing to talk to me, David.
Thank you. Yeah, reach out anytime, Evan.
Bye, David.
Bye.
See David's work at columbuscartography.com, C-O-L-U-M-B-U-S, and on Instagram at columbus.cartography. This episode is brought to you by The Map Consultancy, supplier of professional, data-driven maps for your decks, reports, walls, and events. Visit themapconsultancy.com to see what good maps can do for you. I'm Evan Applegate, I'm a cartographer, and you should make your own maps.
No one wants to see dull, ugly maps. If you want to get through to your customers, you need the best cartography money can buy. The Map Consultancy will create maps with your data and your branding, PowerPoint decks, annual reports, conferences and events, your office walls. The Map Consultancy does it all. Visit themapconsultancy.com and get the best maps today.